Hello all, welcome to the Wide World of Warhammer 40K, brought to you by the Wide World of Wargaming. As always, I am your host, Vincent Morgado. Joining me, only the one this time. We are unfortunately without the services of Michael Schwartz. What up, Alex?
I'm doing well, how are you?
It's freaking hot, as I'm sure you are well aware in Portland.
I know, I wish I was Michael and, you know, enjoying a nice spritzer on a yacht or something like that.
Or, you know, at least going out to row, so if he's got a reason to sweat instead of just sitting in it. We have quite a bit to get to, starting with one major and one GT. We are happily back to talking about tournament results. The Beef and Wing Brawl, I love that name, if I just can't get it out correctly. Event looks like about last weekend, picked up by Mr. TJ Lanigan, the dethroner of Jim Vassal, who also came in fifth at that event. Second place going to... I can't say that. Nick Nettavati. Third place to Tim Dietleffs with Eldar, and then Isaac Bates with the quickly becoming ubiquitous Drukhari primary. Like Tony Meyer said last week, probably one of the three or four best single codex armies in the game. I would be very curious. Well, Alex, you're the man with the list. Let's ask it this way. Did TJ's list change at all?
It changed not at all. You know, it's Blightlord heavy. You know, he's got the foul blight spawn. He's got the Supreme Command detachment for Thousand Suns. He's got the Demon Battalion with the 60 plague bearers or 28 plague bearers rather. It hasn't really changed at all. But you know, if it's not broke, there's no necessary reason to fix it, right?
And until something comes out that can beat it reliably, either.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it is also important to note that not only did TJ get first, and we talked about, you know, Nick and Tim as well for first, second, third, but Jim actually was there and he did get fifth place overall. In fact, mm-hmm. he when we actually do take a look in the final round, his only loss was to Nick Nettavati. So, hey, if you're going to lose, you might as well lose to one of the best, right? So,
some might say the best.
Yeah, obviously great standings for all of the top five. Not to forget Isaac Bates, who got fourth place as well. I actually got to appreciate his team name is Can't Hammer.
Have to wonder if he threw that in just as if that team name was invented just to kind of poke fun at Team Can't Hammer.
Well, that's the thing. Third place, Tim is part of Team Can't Hammer. So then the team in fourth place was Team Can't Hammer. So I got a little chuckle out of that.
Yes, I can. But, no, you can't. Yes, I can.
Exactly. But I like that Nick did very well with his Gene Stealer cult list. And, you know, his hasn't changed from what we might have seen before, with the exception of the fact that there are, you know, he's got a Twisted Helix Battalion for the Anointed Throng. He's got the Patriarch, Primus, 30 Blood Brothers, 20 Aberrants, and a Nexos. But then he also has a four-armed Emperor Battalion with a Primarch, a Primus, 19 Acolytes, 15 Acolytes, 10 Brood Brothers, a Kellamorph. And then he's got a Blood Brothers Supreme Command Detachment, and that is just three tank commanders with battle cannons and heavy bolters.
Ah, we are seeing the end of the night reign of terror, and Nick Nettavati is helping lead the way. Because there's no way he breaks that if what are they called? Remind me the name of that knight. Castellans were still a thing.
They're still a thing. They're just 100 points price here.
Right. So they're not a thing anymore.
Yeah, but you know, I just love the fact that he's got three Russes in his list. Yeah, so, you know, that was a great-looking list right there. The Eldar list is definitely a little strange, too. You know, maybe it's that superior East Coast meta, right? Not to be confused with the vast superior European meta. Yep. We're taking a look at this Eldar list, and it is it's got Eldrad in it. It's got a Warlock. It's got Guardian Defenders and three Night Spinners. He then has a butt ton of Harlequins, as a secondary detachment. So it's kind of a mixed form detachment there. So it's interesting to see. Oh, and then he wraps things up with Ducati detachment with you know, a bunch of witches, basically. So, and succubi. So, you know, it's a very strange list with no hemlock fighters, no you know, no crimson hunters. You know, they're, you're not really necessarily spamming anything outside of, say, you know, the night spinners. It's very interesting to me.
Especially the night spinners, which is something, those are words we probably haven't heard next to each other in God knows how long. I'm trying to look up, there it is, I've been looking for this. There is there, where's this weapon profile? Weapon profile, oh, come on. Well, hang on, I had it. Nope. Okay. We are, no, that's the old AP values. Where is this thing? Well, anyway.
Yikes.
This is probably the first time we've seen anybody in Eldar use vehicle-mounted indirect fire. That's kind of been the unique forte of guard lists until now. And it's been, you know, one of the things that you could argue has held regular Eldar back is their ability to do damage to things they can't see. If they can see it, they can scatter laser it, they can bright lance it, they can pull a star cannon it, pick your favorite gun mounted on a plane, they can shoot it. But Night Spinner is just a different thing because you now can't hide behind, you know, let's just be honest, box, you know, ITC boxes from Eldar anymore. And that's probably what caught a lot of people off guard.
Yeah, I agree. I think that that definitely might be the case. It will heavily depend on what the, you know, what the tables looked like overall. But, I mean, it can be a factor here.
The other thing is that probably, if I remember correctly, just from, you know, its profile, that shreds mortar teams. And as soon as you start beating guard at range, guard loses. Because it's the best way to protect your very light infantry, like your guardian defenders, when the mortars aren't dropping 3d6 shots, rerolling ones on them. And the other thing is night spinners probably are pretty good against most light infantry that you're seeing come out of armies like Gene Stealer Cult, Dark Eldar, even probably demons.
Yeah. There's a lot to be said about a weird mixed list. You know, unlike Mr. Ian or Isaac, my bad, in fourth place, you know, he's got that Dark Eldar list, and it's very well the opposite. It's what we would come to expect out of a Cabal of the Blackheart, with three Razor Wing fighters, bunch, you know, just men witches, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 Venoms, and 3 Ravengers.
Holy shit. I mean, there you go. How many 4-up wounds can you roll? That's the question.
Yeah, this is the, we get it, you're going to take Big Game Hunter list. you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, sure, fine, whatever. You know, you mark for death a few things, you're going to get,
Big Game Hunter. Yeah, the only thing that's, Big Game Hunter wouldn't work on this. They don't give up enough wounds.
Well, not for the Venoms, but between 3 Razor Wing fighters and 3 Ravengers.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. I was thinking of the Venoms.
Venoms are deceptively
would probably be my pick here.
Or Butcher's Bill.
Butcher's Bill, right.
But you got to be really confident that you can kill 2 of those Venoms a turn then. You know, for a lot of people who don't have proper Tigret priority, they're going to have a lot of trouble just because, you know, they do have that invulnerable save. They can be -1 to hit pretty easily. They're not the biggest vehicles, so they can be hidden relatively well. Mm-hmm. On paper, you're like, yeah, it's easy to nuke these, you know, T5 vehicles. But then you're like, oh, you know, they're fast. And they're running away, and they're hard to kill.
They still have their 5-up invul, if I remember correctly.
That's correct, yeah. So if
they decide to start rolling troll, I mean, one of them can eat a round of shooting from a basilisk or something like that.
Yeah, you start putting your heavy weapons on them. With good dice rolls, you just won't do anything potentially.
Yep.
And I've been there. I've had like a 5-man unit of destroyers rerolling failed hits and wounds, hit them at -3 AP and did not even kill one just because of hot dice rolls, you know. Exactly.
The trolliest roll in the game is the 4+, the second is the 5-up. for whatever reason, those two will absolutely go ham on people.
Yeah. But, you know, this last one, I am interested here. I wish I had a side-by-side comparison for Jim. You know, Jim's list is similar, but I don't know if it's the same here. I'm looking at those two units of six. No, as before, just his normal list. I'm looking at those 60 Plague Bearers, Sloppity Bile Piper, a Poxbringer. I'm also looking at his Supreme Command detachment, which for Thousand Suns, which is just not changed. But then we do have the second Demon Battalion, and that has the change caster as normal and another Demon Prince as normal. But then it's got 10 Brimstones, 25 Pink Horrors, and 15 Bloodletters.
I am looking through the old list that we have saved in our group chat, and it does look like that is pretty much what he's always brought. I'm trying to make sure that we're looking at this without being out of order, as that is always a problem. No, it doesn't look like... No, I mean, his previous list had, just so I can clarify, you said 15 Bloodletters, 25 Pink Horrors, and 10 Brimstones?
Yep.
Did he still bring the Hellforged?
That's correct.
Yeah, dude. Nothing changed.
Okay. Well, you know, it did well for him, so...
Well, at this point, how many reps with this list do you think he has? Hundreds?
You know, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what his, what his win ratio might be, right?
I mean, also, if we look at this, he probably was playing for first place. Look at his four wins. 34, 37, 31, and 36.
Well, he played against absolute.
Did he lose against TJ again for first?
No, I mentioned earlier, for pretty much all the marbles, or second place, rather, it was him and Nick.
Oh, I see. Ooh, he lost by 1 point. Oh, that would piss me off.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, it'd be great to see that game.
I would love. This is one of those things that, you know, even though it's a major, you can have small, really out-of-the-way majors with no stream. And it's like, in this day and age, you would think that that's, like, unthinkable. Like, everyone is now streaming for the top table at their event. And it just, you know, for whatever reason, it looks like this one didn't.
Yeah. It's interesting, for sure. Either way, it looks like, there was a good spread of, tables and a good spread of factions here. I don't see one faction just dominating the top 10. You know, there's a whole variety here between, you know, Chaos, Eldari, normal Gene Stealer cult, but it looks like there's a lot of soup here, which isn't super unexpected.
We should look, pull up Tori Pete's list. I've never seen this before. A Coven of the 12 Homunculi list.
Who is that? How far down do we have to go for this?
He's only sixth.
Oh, yeah. You know what? One sec. Yeah, well, it looks like they brought Flesh Eater. Oh, my God. I was talking about a different game for a second.
Wow, that was 2 days ago.
Yes. It looks like he brought... Well, it was Dark Eldar, but it's
It's Homunculi, not Cabal, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but they don't have a separate codex anymore. That was the previous edition.
No, that's but it's a very different style.
Yeah, they don't have, say, a cult ability or whatever. Yeah, great. Grotesque's gonna be real fun.
Let's not ask if, but how many Talos did he bring?
How many Talos?
Yeah,
I can give you a big fat zero.
None.
I see three Razorwing Fighters. We're looking at four Venoms. We're looking at three Ravengers. And then we are looking at two units of eight Grotesques, a couple of units of Rax, four units of Rax, an Archon, and two Homuncula.
That's a very interesting list.
It is a very interesting list, but I can tell you exactly what it does.
Please do.
The two units of eight Grotesques are going to be running up the board. They are, five up save with multiple wounds, but they're a little hardier than people would typically expect. They're going to run up the board. And they are going to just try to either eat away at whatever they got or they come into contact with, or they're going to try to just sit on an objective and pretty much just harass the opponent. The Razor Wing Jet Fighters do as flyers ought to do. And then, of course, everything else is about scoring objectives there. So, you know, it's about getting to where you need to be turn one.
Yeah, it does look like his in his games that were closer, he probably did have trouble holding objectives. But when he won big.
That makes sense. Like, a lot of people are probably going to
super swingy list.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on whether or not your opponent has the tools to deal with it. You know, if your opponents have the tools to deal with 16 racks, it's going to be a short game. But if they don't and they're not prepared for it, and they have a bunch of, say, anti-tank weaponry or weaponry that's meant to kill, say, knights, they might have a little bit of a trickier time. So definitely seems like it's a little bit of a spoiler list, but, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
But, so apparently models in this list can get up to a 4-up four-up invul from their insensible to pain.
That's right. And I believe they also get a shrug save.
Right, yeah. Looks like it can go up to – well, any Dark Elder, I think, can go up to a 5-up from Power from Pain.
Combat, yeah, yeah.
Power and from Pain. And then they've got a replacement of – they've got a remove and replace stratagem, Black Cornucopians, if one of the units of Rax gets too low. And, yeah, I love this. That's something that would scare the ever-loving shit out of me.
Yeah. It looks fun. It looks fun. And, you know, as we like to see with this new changes since the big FAQ, you know, it looks like there are no Imperial Knights in the top 10.
Yeah, but I think probably that was inevitable. I'll be honest, I'm not surprised although we should point out they were 11th.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're going to fall off the face of the earth. But
what I said wasn't wrong, though.
No, that is correct. You are entirely correct. But I just don't want to see them anymore. I don't want to see them as a primary. I don't find knights fun. I don't find them interesting. I think they were probably better left in some of the more exotic areas of 40K, you know, Epic or Apocalypse or things like that. And But far be it from me to tell other people what they can and can't play. Let me put that disclaimer on it. But like, yeah. You know what knights do, and they're not fun anymore. They were cool for a while. Now they're just annoying.
Yeah, they're not as trendy anymore. So people have moved on. Yeah, but you know, Dark Eldar, I am really happy to see that they're popping up here and there a little bit more. In fact, for that other event we have, you know, the Hooded Goblin GT that did occur at the Halton Hills in Ontario for our Canadian friends, you know, for our friends up north. It was actually a BCP sponsored event for all of our BCP subscribers out there. But it didn't quite get major status, but it definitely got GT status pretty easily. And first place was won by a Dark Eldar guy. It looks like it was Ridvan Martinez or Skari Martinez with his Dark Eldar. And, you know, for his, it was 3 Ravengers, 2 Razor Wings, 2 Succubi, an Archon, a bunch of Witches, a bunch of Calibite Warriors, even more Archons, and a bunch of Venom.
Super character heavy.
Yep, a bunch of Venoms for the Calibite Warriors. One Raider and 2 units of Mandrakes. The Mandrakes are really interesting for me because they're just – it's kind of strange seeing Mandrakes there, but I think I know what they are. I think they're basically just a harasser unit. You know, they're there to score and, you know, they're one more target your opponent has to shoot at, you know?
Yeah, but there's a lot of units you could do that. Why would you bring Mandrakes?
I mean, you know, they got an impulse.
I'm only asking – Dark Eldar is not short of cheap, fast units. You know what I mean? If you're bringing Drakes, you're doing it on purpose. Something. What are we missing here?
I don't think we're missing anything. I think he just wanted to run them. I mean, there's four of them are 80 points, so they're a little bit of a spicy meatball per model. Jesus. Yeah. But, you know, very character-heavy list, very fast list. You know, you're seeing them get it done.
So they do have a built-in minus one to hit, which is cool. They are probably one of the few things that is strength four base in the Dark Eldar Codex. They are extremely fast, 8-inch movement. They do have power from pain, of course, and they do make, looks like, 3 attacks base at strength four in combat. So we thought it was good on guardsmen. I can only imagine it's that much better on mandrakes. Plus, they do have, you know, I remember when Bale Blast was a psychic power, or not a psychic power, you had to pay for it or something like that. But now they have a strength 8 or strength 4 minus 1 AP assault 2 18 inch range shot, and they can deploy anywhere within 9. So they're speed bumps, essentially. They're just really choppy speed bumps.
Yeah, they're choppy speed bumps. They got to, you know, they can get to where they need to be, and they can sit on that objective, you know, having, you know, if you've, depending on the mission, you know, you can just have them sit on an objective, hide somewhere, especially in Boxhammer, and just do what they need to do, you know? So it's, I think that they have their tools, you know, or that they're a tool with purpose rather. And it's great to see someone do well with them. But you know, the rest of this list just proves that, you know, it was all about being fast, you know, the typical Dark Eldar fashion, being fast, being able to hit hard and just spam the table with units. So you just mm-hmm. have a swarm of your army on the other side of the table for your opponent. You know, he did very well. You know, it looks like that was strictly in terms of best general. It looks like they actually had a best overall too, which was won by Necrons, but a Sebastian Menego, but that individual ended up getting, looks like that person got 6th overall instead. You know, looking down, I do see that in 3rd place, there was a faction called Forces of the Hive Mind, which I think is just what we're going to be, what, you know, it's interesting. I guess that's how ITC just calls mixed Tyranids with Gene Stealer Cult.
And Gene Stealer Cult, I was just thinking that.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's great to see, you know, something like that. It was just inevitable, you know, a bunch of Brood Brothers, a bunch of Atlan Jackals, you know,
there they are again.
Yeah. A bunch of Acolyte hybrids. And then, you know, just, 2 Broodlords and 3 units of 3 Rippers. And that's the list.
It's interesting that we're starting to see some of the more exotic units in most of these codexes come out. Does that, you think, mean that, you know, Games Workshop is kind of, they're honing in on the appropriate pricing for everything, little by little, step by step?
I don't know, man. I'm not, that's above my pay grade.
Well, just, come on, man. That's why we're here. Like, with Knights gone, or not, with Knights priced appropriately now, and this will kind of feed into our next discussion, you know, are we getting there finally? Like, look at the top 5. I look at the top 5 of this event. You've got Krons, Drukhari, Knights, Tau, Tyranids.
Well, I think it's, you know, I think that there's a mixture of factors right now that are changing the meta. And it very much is because of, you know, say, ITC faction, ITC scores. I think that you got to really attribute it to not only Games Workshop making changes, but also Frontline Gaming. You know, when the change was made to factions where you have to be either 100% pure faction or you're in a soup list like Imperium, Eldari, or Forces of the Hive Mind, or Chaos, I think those are the only 4 soups, then you start not only seeing players who are just going for best ITC or just going to wreck face, you know, like, you know, our Jims, our Jim Vasiles, our Nick Natavadis, etc. Yeah, they don't care about best specific faction because they're doing so well and they have such, you know, competent players that they're just going for best overall. They're going for the big one, you know, which means that not to say that the people who are going for best in faction are inexperienced or unskilled at all, but it takes away from the pool of individuals who are going for those best in factions. So you still see a whole wide range of players who are bringing whatever they want for a pure faction in order to try to compete for that best in faction. So, you know, I think that the fact that there are those two tiers, the tier of people who honestly don't give a crap about, the faction rankings, and then the ones who do. So you're creating a divide, not a, you know, an A grade or a B grade or a tier one or a tier two, but it's more like, you know, a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, and they're not really, you know, one's not above the other. I think that it's creating a little bit more of a, what we would consider a melting pot in the meta.
Right, and then also that was kind of what Reese spoke about when he was on the show, is he wanted to give people who wanted to play faction pure that much more room to be enthusiastic and room to really push the boat out.
Oh, yeah, I'll admit that was an incentive tactic, but it's a helpful one.
Yeah, of course. And it, you know, it looks like they have accomplished the mission. We are seeing the faction pure, basically they can finish in the top five, but they aren't winning.
That's okay. I mean, I got to give a shout out.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I mean, when we do take a look at events just overall, you know, I do got to give, our friend Chad Layton a shout out, another Beast Coast player, who did very well at a 2-day tournament with one of those factions that we might call, you know, the ones that get top 10, but maybe top five. He actually got first place with Necrons at this 2-day event. Now, unfortunately, it didn't hit GT status. It was just about 10, 15 people away from that. It only got 35 players. But, you know, when we look at still 25 players in a faction and everyone's trying to go for certain factions, you know, even if you're not hitting GT status, that's not a – with the changes to, say, the ITC score, it's not a reason to just immediately drop out of the event, of course, or do something drastic. It's not going to just completely whiff any sort of points that you earn. I mean, you're still going to earn a hefty amount going undefeated at a two, you know, for five rounds. And you know, just killing it. And in his instance, you know, actually going 4-0 is very helpful, especially since he is pure faction. And, you know, we also got to remember some armies are pigeonholed into being pure faction. Necrons, Tau, you know, in particular, those are going to be the big ones that just cannot have, you know, any ability to have an additional, faction at all. So, you know, it's not horrible, but, you know, it definitely gives those two factions a lot less to work with, you know. But either way, it's good to see different events and the new spread of players. I mean, hell, at that event alone, which is the Mythicos Triumph GT, for our Age of Sigmar episode this week, we actually reviewed the Mythicos AOS GT, and it certainly, there were actually more people at the AOS event than there were at 40K, but 25 people at a 2-day 40K event, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But looking at the top five there, it's Necrons, Eldari, Custodes, Ultramarines, and Asta Militarum. You know, taking a look at the final 6 through 10, we're looking at Generic Imperium, Pura Lytok, Mixed Eldari, Tau Empire, and then Mixed Eldari again. So sure, you're still seeing a lot of the Mixed Eldar in a lot of tournaments, especially in the top 10. And, you know, that might just be because people want to do good at that particular event too, and not just, you know, best Eldari overall. But you still see those people who are playing. Fourth place was a guy who was going pure Ultramarines, which in a previous episode, in, you know, one of our first episodes, you know, we started talking about stats in late 2018, and pure Space Marines was one of the least performing, least efficient factions in terms of ITC win rate, you know?
Yep.
So, you know, people are still doing it. You know, there are going to be those guys who clearly want to get best Space Marine. But, you know, I'm happy to see this spread.
Yeah, and I mean, talking about things that were once Well, I'll say we'll call it the inverse of that. Death Watch has fallen off the face of the earth fast.
Has it? Has it now?
Well, have we mentioned it on the show since LVO?
No, I saw a tutorial about a guy doing contrast paints with Death Watch, and it looked phenomenal.
That's my point. Like, remember going into BAO, we had our friend Anthony was running wild with Death Watch. We had who was the gentleman from the Midwest who was doing extremely well with a Death Watch Sisters list, and then Sean Naden, I think, touched on it once.
I think he touched on it a couple of times. Yeah.
Yeah, like, and then it's just gone, vanished into thin air. And, I mean, you know, you got to ask yourself why.
I think it's regionally. I just don't think you're seeing it at a lot of big events. I mean, Death Watch is not super common. I mean, it's kind of like Grey Knights. You can say the exact same thing about Grey Knights. So,
no, because Death Watch is like really, nobody's ever said that Death Watch is bad, though. Like, Grey Knights, we just agree, are not good.
Well, that's because Death Watch isn't necessarily what we would consider bad. It's definitely not a top tier army, though. And in order to make pure Death Watch work and be very efficient, it does require you to be a little bit more of a mixed Imperium army. But
right. And, I, you know, we're not seeing it in the soup lists anymore. It's been pushed out by AdMech, or it's been pushed out by Custodes. I mean,
well, you also got to remember that, you know, much like anything else, you know, with influencers, or, you know, whether people are trying to influence intentionally or not, it happens. And
can I just stop and ask you, do you hate that word as much as I do?
Yeah, I kind of do. But I mean, I understand that it exists and it's a part of culture. It's a part of our life, man. Just embrace it.
No,
it happens. Whatever. Either way, when someone does well at a tournament, people are going to start copycatting, whether it's intentional or not. I mean, when, you know, Jim and TJ started wrecking face with demons, all of a sudden demon players started coming out of the woodwork to a degree that I haven't seen since sixth edition, you know? And now Custodes, you know, Custodes are a faction that normally we wouldn't really take too much of a look at unless they suddenly did well. And, you know, Jeff has been killing it with his Custodes. And, you know, this weekend up in Portland, our friend Tasty Taste from Blood of Kittens, he was in town, and he and I got a game in. You know, I brought just a regular kind of metalist-y Necron army, very much similar to how Chad's Mythicos list, and I fought against a pure Custodes with a very high, or no, my bad, it actually wasn't a pure Custodes, it was a Custodes list with some mixed Imperium, the Loyal 32 added to it, and between the Talmon Dreadnought, the four jet bikes he had, the two shield captains on bikes, and the named character, I ended up killing all of his Custodes, but because everything had OBSEC and everything was just so hard to kill, and because of just bad dice rolls on my part, not being able to get the mortal wounds off at the Doomscythe stratagem for the first turn, you know, it led to him just really just whittling me down to the point where by the time I killed all the Custodes, there was just no way I was going to make up points. You know, it was bottom five when I realized that I was, you know, cool. You know, all he's got is, you know, IG left, but I'm not going to table him and there's no way I can get him now. So they're just very hard, you know, and for armies that are trying to build against tanks, Custodes are really good against them because they're 4-up invul and because, you know, they have multiple wounds. And then for armies like mine, which is very much an anti-horde army, anti-light armor army, you know, that type of thing where there's a little bit of anti-tank, a little bit of anti-personnel, but very much anti-horde, anti-numbers, right? My army I made them take 16 armor saves, but when he's got a 2-up armor save and I'm at AP 0, he doesn't care, you know?
And you're only doing one wound for the most part is the other.
Exactly.
Problem.
Exactly. So, you know, his Custodes are just good. And, you know, it's just funny. Nick just picked up one of Jeremy's armies, which right now is Custodes, since he's bringing that. I believe he's bringing that to Boise Cup. He's either bringing that or Harlequins. And it was just funny to see Nick pick up an army and just wreck me with it. But, you know, it wasn't fully my fault. And it's a strong army, and that the Talmoran Dread, the Caladius Grav tanks, you know, those things are efficient, but they may not always necessarily be required in a good Custodes army.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is you could fit Custodes with just about anything.
Yeah.
So that makes them, they're incredibly flexible. And how do you say it? They're good with it. It's not that they just fit. It's that they will wreck shop in every army. It's like, what do you need us to do? We will remove it, and we will take up our opponent's entire shooting and close combat phase to get rid of us.
Yeah.
To the point where we make them points inefficient.
Yeah,
and well, I think that's what the Custodes do better than anybody.
Yeah, and this is the whole crux of my argument is that, you know, we're not seeing Death Watch, not because Death Watch are any less efficient, but that there's these, you know, nice shiny things that have been there for a while, since before the Death Watch Codex. But now it's because people are doing well with it, other individuals are seeing that and going, oh, you know, I have that in my closet, or I haven't fully built that yet. Now I'm going to build it up and run it the next RTT at my, you know, in town. So, you know, people are just seeing what others are doing, and they're running it as well. So I don't think there's an issue of Death Watch being any better or worse than any other type of faction. I just think, yeah, the new sexy right now is Custodes. In 3 months, it'll be something different.
As it always is. Let's move on here. I think we've covered those two events pretty in depth.
Oh, yeah.
Let's have a nice little relaxed conversation about something that will not be inflammatory in any way whatsoever. Should relics cost points instead of command points?
No.
I'll let you start. Go.
No. You already...
That was easy.
I mean, it's important. I mean, Games Workshop's pretty consistent in their game systems with, you know, whether it be a relic, however you want to name them from the Codex, or an artifact of power in a different game system. You know, these relic-type items, the first one is always free for 40k, but then after that you start paying for them. You know, you can be a little finagly, and you know, if you are bringing a soup list and you you know, have your auto you know, your auto free one, and then just use two separate extra relics, one from the same faction, one from a different faction, you know, it's only one CP for each one of those additional relics. So, you know, you are spending command points on that. However, in the grand scheme of things, especially in Imperial armies, with the ability to just regenerate a CP a turn, or even steal a CP, that really doesn't end up being too crazy, you know, losing two before the game begins, especially since your opponent might just use two to get plus one cover save.
Well, that's true, but let's also, I mean, we do have to admit that not all relics in all armies are created equal. And when you give all relics the same point cost, you're essentially implying that they all have an equal impact on the game. I'll just use Guard as an example of why I think maybe they should have a unique point cost, a unique CP cost each. The Relic of Lost Cadia against 3/4 of armies is wasted command points, right? It does nothing. If you're Chaos, it's game winning. I can bury you in one round of shooting. But the other hand, you have Kurov's Aquila, which is good against everyone all the time, right?
Yeah.
They're both one CP. So, and with the mechanic to be able to pay three to add another relic, you're kind of implying, you're allowing a level of list tailoring that we really haven't had in 40K before, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that you get into a slippery slope when we start talking about points, and I don't know, sounds very clickbaity, and, you know, our
but the thing is it really, it's not, I don't know if I call it clickbait, and it's a decent question, because a lot of lists in 40K do rely heavily on the relics they bring. Like, take Kurov's Aquila away from Guard, take the Laurels of Command away from Guard, take any one of a dozen away from Chaos. Take the Vexillarius away from Custodes. Like, you immediately start changing the composition of these lists, if not their viability. with what they're able to do with relics. Like, I can tell you right now, if you doubled the cost of Kurov's Aquila, guard players would pay it, but we definitely, it would be a thought, you know? There would be a question of, do I just bring Grand Strategist, and do I maybe bring something else, right?
I don't know, man. I would fight any notion of adding point cost or command point cost to relics that are more than just how they're currently in place. I think it's fine the way they are. I don't think too many of the relics are, you know, yes, they can be game changing, but every faction has game changing relics. That's just a nature of what relics are. You know, it'd be boring and no one would play the game if every faction was the same and every faction had the exact same menu of the exact same relics under different names or different circumstances. Nobody wants to play that.
That's not what I'm saying. I just think that maybe there needs to be a re-examination of how relics are costed, even if you don't go to army points. Let's say we stay away from adding a point value to it and we just stick to maybe these should be priced individually for command points. Mm. Is that so wrong?
I wouldn't want to do it personally. I just
would you not? Are you more afraid of getting it wrong and setting the meta back than you are of the actual mechanic itself?
A little bit of both. The more wargamers are great individuals and we all have a degree of intelligence involved in playing the game.
Well, maybe you do. I can't speak for myself.
But we may not always be the best at deductive reasoning. We may also not be the best at word comprehension. And the more you start adding to things, the more people will either try to abuse it and then just be potentially labeled something they don't want to be labeled, or they might just totally screw up and just constantly ask questions and quite frankly annoy their TO. So, you know, I think that adding this added, say, degree of complexity, though it's not complex in this conversation at all, I think it's something that is easy to understand. I just think that you can't always expect the masses, so to speak, to understand those levels, especially players who are playing at much more of a lower, lower, say, baseline. I think that that's just one small reason why I wouldn't want to add points to command. I also do, just as you mentioned, think that that would be a little bit too much of a crazy mashup to where things are currently, and it would kind of create a lot of frantic list changes. Who knows what might happen in the future? I really think that talking about points and whether it be command points or actual points to relics is just irresponsible, or at least the notion of doing so.
Well, that's interesting. Diplomatic as always, you are my friend. Last thing we want to get to tonight, let's go ahead and talk about the Wasteland, the gentleman. It's the same one as the Gentleman's GT in Vegas, right? Wasteland Weekend?
Yeah, it's Gentleman's GT. It is going to be at the, I think it's the Golden Corral in Vegas, right next to the Rio.
Yep. Run by our friends Tony Myers and Anthony D'Amore is helping with the event.
Yeah. They're going to have 40K. They're going to have AOS. It looks like they have a good turnout for both systems. I unfortunately cannot make it. I wasn't able to really get everything organized and ready to go in time, but it looks like it's going to be a blast. They have bonus awards prize for the most dapper player. So for all of our listeners out there who are going in just a few days, bring your best and brightest.
Break out the waistcoats, gentlemen. Break out the waistcoats. But we wanted to talk about something that came down in the last couple days that stirred up a little bit of controversy. The Wasteland event is handing out yellows, straight yellow cards, to anyone who did not submit their list on time. And if you arrive at the event without submitting an approved list, you will not be allowed to play, period. Now, a couple days ago, I won't say a couple days ago, Recently, we had a discussion in X-Wing about what would happen if people kept abusing sportsmanship and, you know, shall we say, flexible tournament rules, and that somebody would eventually drop the hammer. Well, I think somebody just did. Because we've all wanted this. Let's just be honest. We've all wanted this, most of us, for a very long time, you know. And I applaud the organizers of this event for just saying, look, submit your list ahead of time so we have time to check everybody before they show up. No special categories, no exemptions, nothing.
Yeah, you know, this is something that's becoming more common. I mean, it was something that was even present at LVO this year. You know, as an example, again, different game system, but individual had changed their list twice after the deadline at LVO for AOS, and then just immediately started the tournament with two yellow cards. You know, with the final yellow card at round five of the event turning into a red card. So, yeah. So kind of all at once you go bang, 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 you know, and, you know, it's the responsibility of the player to know better. But, you know, it's an enforceable thing. You know, that's why there was a bit of a joke. It was like, oh, great. You know, there were over 500 players in 40K at LVO this last year, and none of them got a red card. There were definitely some yellow cards, but no red cards. And so, you know, having this type of policy, I don't always agree with the idea of submitting lists ahead of time, but I understand the reason for it, especially in 40K, and being able to just cover and double check and triple check all the army lists out there with all the variations that are possible to make sure that everyone's legal. You know, we don't want an Adepticon situation coming about from a few years ago or otherwise, where there's a little finicky thing here and there that slips through the cracks. And, you know, of course there are those players out there that, you know, I got to keep it family friendly, but you know, there are those players out there that will find those
advantage.
They'll look for those little keyholes, and or you know, even if it's not even that good, even if it's just something that they perceive as ooh, the secret sauce, you know, those small little things, if they're inaccurate or if they're wrong, you know, they need to get caught, you know, they need to get filtered through. So I understand and I appreciate the idea of submitting your list ahead of time, especially for an event like this that might be, you know, a 40K major event. For the smaller events, I don't always think that that's necessarily relevant, you know, for a small GT or especially an RTT. But yeah, there's obviously merit involved with, you know, with these type of list reviews. And it's important to make sure the players are accountable to that.
And, you know, definitely with an event that is in Vegas, which is a distance for most people who go, you know, this is one of those things where a lot of people are going to be putting a lot of money on the line to be here and to show up. And they all would prefer to play an event that is straight up. And I really love the fact that another tournament is doing what they can to protect the majority of their players from the tiny minority.
I agree. It's, you know, it's going to be very helpful to make sure that everyone is, you know, up to date and legit. You know, it's really interesting because, you know, I remember years ago, people were really kind of concerned on how you might go about making sure that everyone does upload their lists or submit their lists ahead of time. And, you know, I've seen TOs try to just give incentives to their players, you know, bonus points starting the game if they actually submitted their list ahead of time. But of course, then the salt truly does flow for those who didn't.
As it must.
As it would. But I think that this is a lot better. You know, we've come to the point now where there are just some obvious truths involved. There are some obvious truths involved. And are you there?
You just cut for a second. It's fine.
Yo, Vince.
I hear you.
Vince. Yo.
Yeah, I definitely think accountability is important at tournaments, and it's nice to see that more and more of the community is moving in a direction that supports that, especially in terms of how much money people spend to go to these events. Like, yeah, if you're on the West Coast, Vegas is like a $70 plane ticket, and it's the Golden Corral, so you know you're not paying $500 a night, but you're still away from work, you're away from your family, you're talking about food for a couple of days, you're talking about the hotel fare and the airfare and transportation if you don't stay on site. Like, this is investment for a lot of people who go to these, and they expect a fair shake. So I just want to wrap this up by saying that we wanted to applaud the Wasteland GT for going this far out in terms of following the player conduct policy. And we wish everyone there a good event and best of luck to all involved.
Yeah, best of luck. It looks like it's going to be a great event. Again, I am super bummed I can't make it, but it looks like it is going to be a blast. And Tony and Anthony are great people. So, yeah, you guys have a few drinks, dress up fancy, and roll some dice.
Don't give Anthony's ego any more inflation.
Put on deodorant. Put on deodorant. That too.
Ooh, yeah. That's not nice.
Has to be said.
Has to be said. All right. You wanted to get in one last thing.
Yeah, I do have something to plug. You know, there has been events regularly in the Portland area, but there's been a little bit of a downturn lately. I do want to let all of our listeners know, especially if they're in the Pacific Northwest or just the West Coast or wherever, especially if they just like Portland, Oregon, there is the Stumptown Stomp events that have started up at Guardian Games. We are going to have quarterly RTTs. We've already had one in March, and the next one is going to be the end of June. We have June 29th at Guardian Games in Portland, Oregon. There's going to be a Stumptown Stomp second quarter event. The third quarter event is going to be in September or October, and we are going to finalize the year with a Stumptown Stomp major event. This is going to be at Guardian Games. It's going to be a 64 player event, and it is going to be in late November of this year. So, you know, that is something that I'll be able to provide more information to our listeners with. But, you know, for the 1 day events and for the 2 day events, you know, myself as well as two other individuals, Bronson from Trump Change, and then my friend Cameron, we're going to be the TOs for the event, as well as the TOs for the major as well. You know, we're going to have awards for first and second and sports. We're also going to have two door prizes for the 1 day events. For the major, there's going to be a lot more involved with prize support. And, you know, you yourself, Vince, have been to events at Guardian with the previous Guardian Cups. Rest in peace. And, you know, there's a lot there, you know. Plus, it's going to be a 21 and up event. So, you know, there is booze that is purchasable on the back end.
I want to pop some drink. I'm not going to do it. but I absolutely adore Guardian Games. It is one of my favorite stores I have ever been to. And I wish you all the very best of luck. Remember, folks, if you do go, invest in local businesses, help keep Portland weird. Alex, let's go ahead and sign off.
Everyone have a good night. We'll see you on the 29th then.
Schwartz, we miss you, and we look forward to bringing you back next week. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we look forward to you listening next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.